Hey, it's Sean. It's time for another episode of Fun Kids Meets. This is the podcast where we introduce you to some excellent, interesting people. Dan is here with some amazing guests. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Sean. Thank you for having me. I've brought you magical guests.
Magical guests. If you're big Harry Potter fans or just fans of behind the scenes of cinema and want to know how films are made, then this is going to be an excellent interview. I'm particularly excited because I've spent the entire weekend playing the Harry Potter Battle of Hogwarts board game. So I am in absolute maximum Harry Potter mode, and I'm excited to hear about these behind the scenes. So Dan, tell us about your chat with your guest today.
So I recently was joined by a company called Mina Lima Magic, and they make props. They make physical props that were used in the Harry Potter films. So I was joined by Mira and Eduardo, and they kind of come together. They've brought, like, one's really good at more abstract, arty stuff. The other's really good at physically making things. And they made props for all the movies in the Harry Potter universe. So they're HPU, so everything from the Philosopher's Stone right through to Deathly Hallows, and now some of the Fantastic Beasts films as well. It's kind of everything that's you physically hold, they've got a big part of. And when you think about how many props there are in these films, I mean, the amount of work they have to do is mind-blowing.
I think if those of you who are listening who may have visited Harry Potter World and seen the sheer number and sometimes the sheer size of the props that are used in the film, then it's amazing to think about the amount of talent that has to go into making these props and these movie items.
Exactly, because I'm all up in my head, like I'm really bad at actually crafting anything. So the fact that these people can, like, have an idea, then design that idea, and then do it and make it to a standard that it's in one of the, like, most successful movies ever is really, really hard to get my brain around. Like, the fact that these two are so fantastic at it. But it was really good, and they came into the studio and we filmed it. And they even brought in some props as well.
I was about to ask, we're getting some behind the scenes of the film. Let's see the behind the scenes of the interview. What props did they bring to show you?
They brought in one of the official Hogwarts letters that Harry has sent in the first film that he's bamboozled with. And it was amazing. Do you remember that thing you would do where you'd make a treasure map at school, and to make it look really old and rustic, you'd kind of soak it in coffee for 48 hours and crinkle it and crunch it. Well, it was like that, but done on a much, much better level than we would have got away with. And this fantastic letter that opened up at the back, and you know that Uncle Vernon would have been so happy thinking there's no post on Sundays, but then brought out Harry's invitation to Hogwarts. So he got that. And then also they brought in one of the chocolate frog boxes.
That is so good. That's so good. And also, very lucky that you got to see that. And is there a video then we can watch to see these props?
I believe there is, yeah. We definitely videoed it and it went on the Fun Kids YouTube channel, so you can go in there and have a look. I'm sure it's there. It was a lot of fun because we're in our swanky studio now where everything's plush and glistening and just to be like around these people who have created magic.
Well, you're here now, so let's hear Dan's chat with some of the prop makers from the Harry Potter films.
It's fun, kids. We are celebrating 20 years of the very first Harry Potter film, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, joined today by two people who, I don't want to say unsung heroes, but people you might not think about who really do work with the stars of the show. Mirafora Mina and Eduardo Lima. Together, they are Mina Lima. They are the props for the Harry Potter movies, for the franchise now, for the Wizarding World. They do all of that, and they're with us. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
What was the very first thing that you ever made for anything Harry Pottery?
Yes. Well, it's quite a lovely kind of thread, actually, because it was one invitation letter to Hogwarts, which, you know, innocently I didn't realize was going to also be my invitation to the Wizarding World, because it was, you know, I was invited to do 4 months or 6 months, I think, on the first film, and kind of 20 years later we're still here talking about it. But yeah, that was the first prop. And without that piece, I guess nothing would have happened to both Harry, the Wizarding World, and to the whole unfolding of the stories.
This is the most, Eduardo, probably the most iconic. I would say you've got the broomsticks, the wands, the golden snitch, and then this, the letter I've got here. You'll know it. It's the letter that he's bombarded with in the first film. It's such an iconic image.
As Mira said, you know, if Harry hadn't received that letter, we wouldn't be here talking about this. So so this letter, I think Mira is the most iconic piece on Harry Potter. It's not because you made it, but I think it's because of the meaning of the letter that Harry is invited to this wizarding world for the first time.
And this, as you say, this invited you to be part of the wizarding world as well. When you're making something for such a huge film, such a huge series, how much guidance are you given by the director and the producer and people in charge? Are they very specific, here's what I want, or have you got an opportunity to just use your brain?
No.
That's a good question. Yeah.
We were given, you know, completely freedom to initiate all the concepts and all the designs. And of course, in films, it's a partnership, you know, so you work with the designers and the director, and you have to show them, and if they are happy, and mostly, no, yeah, luckily, we
yeah,
all,
yeah,
everything that we kind of initiated, they agreed and they
and
like
of course
it.
Don't forget that there wasn't a right or wrong to begin with,
yeah,
because nothing really existed. You know, there were no wizarding maps or newspapers or letters and posters that we could go and find and buy and borrow or rent. So it all had to be invented. So it was kind of easier in a way for us to just offer up that style and see if it worked. And it kind of did, apparently.
But I think the approach that we had as well, that we were following exactly Harry as well, because Harry was the first time that he has been introduced to this amazing world. So we were doing the same thing.
What's the stage of making something? So as in, you know, if you're doing homework at home, you get given a list of what you need to do. If you're packing to go on holiday, you get a list of what you need to pack. How did it work for you when you sit there for the third film, say, The Prisoner of Azkaban? Does the director go, right, here's what I need, a list of like 5,000 things?
No, what we do, we work with lists. Lists are very important. So we read the script, and from the script, we will create two lists. One list is the action hero, action props, that are the props that the actors will interact with. For example, the latter is an action prop. And we do another list that is enormous, is huge, is the background dressing. That would be anything that's graphic to decorate a room. For example, if I walk in the street, all the signage, even the cars, the car plates, everything comes to the graphic design department. Yeah, so the background dressing can be quite intense because you need to make sure everything fits.
And fun
properly.
Fact is that, yeah, you don't shoot most films, I think there's very few, are not shot in the order of time,
no,
chronologically. So if this object is, I don't know, gets burned, for example, yeah, but they shoot that scene before they shoot the one where it's not, then you need to think
Maybe.
Ahead. So that's when the lists become really critical, because you need to be very organized about what's needed when, what time of year it is, who's got it, whether it was broken before or after, you know, all those kind of little subtleties that need to then flow through the film.
But a good example is with the letter, Nomir, because at the scene that you mentioned with all the letters coming through, you had to make thousands and thousands of different.
Yes, and also we didn't quite anticipate that owls, who are carrying it so beautifully in that scene, found it difficult to lift that because their little heads are only about that big. And so you can imagine this was very heavy, so we had to make some lighter weight versions for the owls, which you wouldn't know unless maybe you could just freeze frame the film and see if you can.
Yeah, constantly problem solving. How late in the day are you working at times? So, I don't know, perhaps when Harry's in Ollivander's getting his wand, if I looked around the corner, would I see you two out of shot, like quickly painting bits of wood? How close to the wire is it?
I mean, with the whole point of having lists is that you can plan ahead.
Yeah.
But the whole point of human beings is they change their mind. So as soon as someone changes their mind, or an owl reveals that it can't carry a letter that you've made without knowing that that was a special requirement, then, yeah, you might be doing some late nights. And that's just part of the process.
Yeah.
How annoying is it, especially with a film like Harry Potter, where everything gets blown up and destroyed? What's it like for you as props people when you've put so much work, so much passion and time into something, and then it eventually gets blown up? And do you need multiples for these things as well?
Yes,
yeah,
multiples.
But one thing that is all the books, now all the school books, we have to make them beautifully. We send it to a bookbinding, and they do all beautiful leather work and with tooling and, you know, embossing, and they send back to us. And when we received the books, we have to destroy it. We need to age to give the, you know,
the patina of history and
yeah.
And
so, like, for
life,
example,
yeah.
Deed of the Bard, the book that Dumbledore leaves for Hermione at the last film, the books arrived beautifully. We designed the entire book, but the book binder puts it together, and after we have to go and sand and destroy, throw on the floor, and age with coffee to give the sense that has been with
Dumbledore
for a long time.
But to your point of things,
but so yeah, so we don't really. It's all about the story, no? Yeah. So whatever it works for the story, we need to do.
But you said, do we mind things being blown up and destroyed? Well, that's only the ones that you actually see. Don't forget, for everything that you see in the film, there's probably been another. You know, for every one prop, there's probably another 20 things that have been created that never quite make it onto the into the cut, into the final cut. So that's just part of filmmaking for everybody. For, you know, everyone involved, there's always been much more effort that's been put in that just simply doesn't make it into the final cut.
What's the toughest thing that you were ever asked to make, the biggest challenge that took you ages and took you so much imagination?
I think in my experience was more anything muggle.
The normal stuff.
Normal stuff. Because everyone was like, oh, no, muggle, no. We all wanted to be immersed all the time in the wizarding world. So every time there was a scene outside the wizarding world, we were like...
Like in a cafe. Or don't forget, there's a few scenes that go into the real world. And all that stuff needs to be invented. We couldn't really just go and buy, you know, branded drinks or magazines or labels or street names and things. So it all had to be made, but to look as though it just was part of the background, which is kind of what people do most of the time in our role for films. But so that was probably the most annoying thing, but probably the most challenging and interesting thing was probably the Marauder's Map, simply because it didn't have any explanation as to what it should look like. It told us in the books what it did and what it made people feel or do, but it never actually was, she never gave a description, a physical description of what it should look like, which was fantastic for us because it gave us this freedom to really kind of invent a visual language for it, both in the illustration part of it, but also in the kind of construction and the 3D part, how it would unravel. So
with the Marauder's Map, a lot of that is special effects. So they open it up and then everything's moving, which I imagine must be done on the computer. How much thought do you have to give with physical things that you are making, how it can be changed and edited on a screen and made all magic using special effects?
In Harry Potter, most of the props, the paper props and stuff that we've been tasked to do, still keep their kind of paper quality. I'd say the probably the most extreme, and that was such a basic thing, was that the Daily Prophets, the newspapers where you had the photograph was animated.
A moving photograph. Yeah.
So we would deliver a finished piece, as Eduardo said, an actual newspaper. And wherever there was a photograph, we'd put a magical piece of chromicky green.
Yeah.
And then in post-production, they could animate whatever they wanted in that space. But for the most part, even when the lettering moves and stuff, we just make sure that we deliver what we want, the beginning, even the Howler, for example, the beginning one and the end one, and maybe a little storyboard of what it should do in between. But on the whole, things, what was lovely about Harry Potter, that even for the sets, everything was so built and physical. You know, they didn't rely too heavily on visual effects unless it was something like Quidditch or flying or, you know, so.
But even there's a scene where the Marauder's Map is closes magically in Lupin's table. That was all done physical by a magician, like a real muggle magician. But of course, no, the flying banners with the names and the footsteps, those were all added on visual effects. But we gave the banners and the footsteps. We draw the footsteps and gave it to visual effects, and after they act.
It's a really lovely collaboration, actually, between the departments when that happens.
Mm. Yeah.
it's been such a treat. Harry Potter is, you know, 20 years of the film now, the first film. It's been such a part of so many people's lives, and you're, as I say, not quite unsung heroes, but you're the people that have made so much of, like, the building blocks that no one really ever wonders how they get there. And it's because people like you have put so much incredible work in. Listen, Mina Lima, the two of you, thank you so much for for coming in and telling us all about
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thanks for
Thank
having us.
Thank you very much.
As someone who's been to Harry Potter World, I think it's just even more impressive hearing their stories about how these props were made and some of the tales behind them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Just the fact that these people had dived into the Harry Potter world that at that point was only on paper. Yeah. It was only through J.K. Rowling's books. And then imagine what it would look like in real life, and then went through and made it. And this won't be like an easy process. They'll be chatting to producers and directors and maybe working with the actors as well to see what they want from it. And to bring all of that together to make something that looks so real on screen is incredible. If I got a letter from Hogwarts and I'm still waiting for mine, I would imagine it would look like that. And it was with the font, and they told us all about the font and the precise lettering that they used in there. It's just incredible. They've spawned like a whole genre of font. I don't know if fonts have genres, but they've made one if they do.
It's amazing stuff. And if you want to see some of the props and watch the interview, then it's over on our Fun Kids YouTube channel. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Sean.
And we will be bringing you more interesting people next week on the Fun Kids Meets podcast. So make sure you smash that follow button wherever you're listening to your podcasts. We'll see you next time.